Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, says it has presented a Gaza ceasefire proposal to mediators with the aim of putting an end to ongoing campaign of genocide. Yemen's answer, the leader says operations against Israel-linked vessels will extend to include ships crossing the Indian Ocean. And Russians are heading to polls throughout the country in a three-day presidential election. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says it's put forth a new proposal for a Gaza ceasefire with the aim of ending Israeli war on the besieged territory. Hamas says it has presented the proposal to Egyptian and Qatari mediators. The movement says under this proposal, the occupying Israeli forces have to leave Gaza. Hamas says this proposal also includes return of displaced Palestinians to their homes and providing them with aid. Exchange of Palestinian prisoners with Israeli captives held in Gaza is also included. Reports say the initial exchange will see release of Israeli women, children, the elderly, and sick. They'll be freed in return for the release of 700 to 1,000 Palestinians. The Israeli regime, though, said the new Hamas position is based on what it called unrealistic demands. Senior Hamas official Osama Hamdan has already said any Israeli opposition only means that the regime wants to continue this war. Meanwhile, the Israeli military has conducted new attacks on different locations throughout Gaza. Our correspondent in the central city of Deir al-Bala earlier joined us with some details.
In the meantime, the Israeli occupation artillery maintained its shelling towards the eastern part of several areas of Gaza Strip, particularly here in Deir al-Balah city and Al-Mughraga neighborhood, and even Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. Heavy artillery shelling reached those areas, and that shelling actually was maintained over the night. And even in Jabalia refugee camp and in Khan Yunis city, the Israeli artillery also maintained and continued their attacks and airstrikes. In the meantime, the central areas of Khan Yunis city and Jabalia refugee camp also were hit relentlessly by those Israeli continuous airstrikes. Several residential buildings destroyed over those cruel attacks.
And condemnations continue pouring in over Israel's massacre of over 100 Palestinians waiting for humanitarian aid in Gaza City on Thursday. The Palestinian Mujahideen movement says Israel's shelling of aid seekers at the Kuwaiti roundabout is a stain of shame for anyone complicit in the crime. The resistance movement held the U.S. and other Western states, along with some Arab countries, responsible for Israel's genocide in Gaza. Another resistance movement, Hamas, reacted as well, criticizing failure of the international community and the UN to take action against Israel. Hamas said inaction has given the regime the green light to commit such horrific crimes against Palestinians. Israel has time and again targeted aid seekers in Gaza in the past several weeks. The regime unleashed its war back in early October, killing over 31,300 people, most of them women and children. And the repeated Israeli attacks on aid seekers in Gaza was a topic earlier of our news review program. Here it is. And now welcome everyone to the news review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. Joining us now for the program is Habiba Jaguri, a journalist and activist, joining us from Adelaide, and John Stepling, author and commentator, joining us out of Inderøy, Norway. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess, Habiba, we'll do the gentlemanly thing here and start with you first. Your initial thoughts: who in what conflict provides denies a civilian population of food, water, and medicine, and the little that does get in, it targets them when they are desperately seeking to go after it?
Thank you so much for having me. Well, a regime that has started off being anti-human in politics from the very beginning of its foundation, that from the very beginning of its foundation started off as a lie, started off as an excuse to come and plunder and steal resources. Of course, something like this, some atrocious, absolutely horrific war crime of using starvation as a weapon of war and then killing people seeking aid, seeking food. Of course, such a result will come from Israel, a terrorist state. Israel has been a rogue state from the very beginning of its foundation. It has never, ever given importance to human life.
John, welcome to the program. Now, John, you know very well if there's a lorry, a big rig, an 18-wheeler somewhere in Ukraine carrying humanitarian aid, and it gets targeted, it'll be all over Western corporate media news. This is eight trucks getting in, one out of every 500 are getting in. And then when they do, you're not just hitting the truck. Sometimes you are, actually. The Israelis sometimes are hitting them en route on highways. But the worst part is hitting when people are scattered around them, resulting, and you very well know it's been done systematically, and it's not just on one incident now.
Yeah. Well, what your other guest said is worth underscoring again. And yes, of course, there's a double standard that's a naked double standard in reporting on Israel and Gaza from Western media. It's shocking, actually. But your other guest is right. Israel has been a settler colonial imperial project from even before 1948. They were killing Arabs even before that. Ergun and the Stern Gang and so forth were terrorizing the region. You can go back and look up the bombing of the King David Hotel and on. The list of war crimes from committed by Israel is nearly endless.
Habiba Jaguri joining us from Australia, and Mr. John Stepling there joining us out of Norway. That brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now. Now, leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement says the country will expand its military operations against Israeli-linked ships and will prevent their crossing through the Indian Ocean.
Our main battle is to prevent ships associated with the Israeli army not only from passing through the Arabian Sea, the Red Sea, and the Gulf of Aden, but also with the grace and assistance of Allah Almighty. We aim to prevent their crossing through the Indian Ocean and from South Africa towards the Cape of Good Hope. This is an important advance and significant step, and we have already begun to carry out operations related to it.
Ansarullah leader said so far three operations have been conducted in the Indian Ocean. The Yemeni armed forces have been attacking Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea since mid-November to force the regime into stopping its campaign of genocide in Gaza. And in response, the U.S. and U.K. have launched a series of airstrikes on Yemen for what they call protecting international shipping. Yemen, though, rejects that claim and has retaliated by targeting American and British vessels in the Red Sea. Latest U.S.-led airstrikes hit Yemen's Hajja governorate early Friday. Yemen says Israel, the U.S., and Britain are all responsible for the mounting tensions. And as we follow the ongoing weekly demonstrations in support of Gazans and in condemnation of Israel's campaign of genocide in Yemen, we're also joined at one of the rallies, today's rally, I guess, by Abdul Latif Al-Washali. Hello, Abdul Latif. Hope you're safe and doing well out there in Sana'a. What can you tell us?
Thank you so much. You know, despite the sunny and hot weather, the people here, and also despite their being fasting today, you know, it's Ramadan, but the people have chosen to gather here. You know, they came from across the city to gather in the capital, Sana'a, and also in other cities to express their solidarity with the Palestinian people. They said they can't just remain passive while witnessing the oppressed people of Palestine suffer from killings and being starved to death by at the hands of the Israeli regime. They have to do something. They have to demonstrate. They have to keep provoking the Yemeni army to escalate its operations in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. And today we've seen them being happy after hearing the speech of Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi yesterday, saying that the naval operations now will be escalated and now they will target the Israeli ships, not only in the Red Sea and Bab al-Mandab Strait, but also in the Indian Ocean and in the South Africa. The people today are very happy. They said they will keep telling the Yemeni army and urging the Yemeni army to keep escalating its operations. We will have in a few minutes, I believe, a new statement released by the spokesperson of the Yemeni army, the Brigadier Yahya Sari'i. We believe it's going to be about an operation that was conducted last night. We will wait, inshallah, and see what he's going to tell us today.
Okay, so Abdul Latif, Yemenis, these anti-Israeli operations, and I believe Abdul Malik al-Houthi said there were 73 so far, which is a pretty significant anti-Israeli operations in the Red and Arabian Sea, and three so far in the Indian Ocean. So now we're talking about quite a significant geographical area that's going to be covered by Yemen's armed forces targeting these Israeli-linked vessels, three separate seas.
You know, when we heard Saad Abdul Malik saying that, we knew that when he said that they have new surprises for the American, the Israelis, and also for the British, they have surprises for them in the sea. We know that it was right. They have, I believe, new weapons, new missiles. They have tested these missiles, and they were successful. They will now be targeting the Israeli ships with those missiles. You know, I remember in 2018, I believe, we heard the General Yahya Sari'i saying that they have been able to manufacture a drone on a daily basis. That was in 2018. I believe now, 6 years later, they have been able to expand the manufacturing of the drones, and they have thousands of drones that they will use them now in targeting the Israeli linked vessels, not only in the Red Sea and the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, but also in the Indian Ocean and in the South Africa. They will now keep hunting the Israeli linked vessels until the Israeli war and genocidal war against the people in Gaza ceases. It is a right for the Yemeni people to defend our land and also to defend the people in Gaza according to international law.
All right, thank you, Abdul Latif. We'll be following this very closely. We'll probably swing back into you as soon as the Yemeni armed forces make this very highly and much anticipated statement during this rally later. We'll come back live to you, but hang out. We'll talk to you soon. Abdul Latif Al-Washali there joining us from Sana'a.
Thank you.
You bet. Meanwhile, people throughout Russia are heading to polls to choose a new president for the next 6 years. Vote is taking place throughout the country's 11 time zones. More than 112 million people are eligible to cast their ballots from Friday today and through Sunday. Incumbent President Vladimir Putin is running for a fifth term. He has three rivals. They are from the New People Party, the Liberal Democratic Party, and the Communist Party. Now, prior to this election, Putin called on Russians to vote, saying people are the only source of power in his country. He said Russia is going through a difficult period and needs to stay united and confident to overcome it. The vote is also taking place in four regions that Russia annexed from Ukraine back in 2022, namely Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson. Our correspondent Johnny Miller earlier joined us from Moscow with more details on the ongoing presidential race in Russia.
Well, as you say, Russians, millions of Russians going to the polls over the next 3 days, Friday to Sunday. Frankly, nobody expects anybody else to win except for Vladimir Putin. He's been effectively in power for the last 20 years, and almost certainly he will win another six-year term. The major reason for that is that he's very popular. That's the reality. The economy is stable and growing. Politically, it's stable, despite, of course, the major conflict, the war, the special military operation, as it's called here, that's going on in Ukraine. The main opposition is from the left and the right of him. The Communist Party usually comes second in these elections, and there's certainly opposition, not necessarily about opposition to how the country is generally going, but certainly disagreements with Vladimir Putin from more on the right, more ultra-nationalist.
Conflict in Ukraine has led to a major restructuring of the global weapons market, according to a new report from a top NGO dedicated to peace. Europe has doubled its arms imports in recent years, with Russia dropping from its longtime number two spot behind the U.S. Rami Mazahari reports out of Paris.
The top annual analysis of global arms sales found that France has risen to the number two weapons exporter in the world. The gains have often been made thanks to debt from Ukraine, which has become Europe's largest arms importer. French arms sales have soared 50% in recent years and now comprise 11% of the global market. The world's leading arms dealer is still the United States, which controls a record 42% of the global weapons trade.
Pour nous, c'est assez paradoxal.
For us, it's a little paradoxical that a nation which claims to be a country which greatly respects human rights is also a nation which is so very proud of its weapon sales. It's clear that the values of the French people and human rights are subservient to geostrategic interests, and we shouldn't celebrate France's arming of often dictatorial regimes.
Arms sales to Ukraine has proven to be big business, and it may explain President Emmanuel Macron's about-face on the conflict. 2 years ago, Macron warned that Russia must not be humiliated, but he's recently become one of Europe's leading anti-Russia war hawks. France's top three arms clients are India, which is the world's largest arms importer, followed by Saudi Arabia and tiny but rich Qatar. Africa is still reeling from 40 tons of illegal free arms drops France made in 2011 to support anti-Gaddafi rebels in Libya. As predicted, the weapons soon found their way to Syria, the Central African Republic, Ukraine, and elsewhere.
D'exposer son matériel de guerre.
French arms in Africa allows France to show off their latest weapons and present them as combat proven. So Africa is not just a show window for French arms, but also a testing laboratory, and with always destabilizing results for the continent.
This week, French Parliament approved a 10-year military pact with Kiev, which guarantees billions in more weapons deliveries. Russia continues to gain ground against NATO-backed Ukraine, which is an important reminder that some weapons are made to work under actual wartime conditions, and some are made mainly for sales and profit. Ramin Mazaheri, Paris.
Nigerian Muslims, like millions of others worldwide, are fasting throughout the holy month of Ramadan. However, rising costs of living in the countries cause significant challenges for many during this fasting period. Danjuma Abdullahi reports.
Ramadan, a sacred month in Islam, is a month to cultivate self-discipline, self-control, sacrifice and empathy for those in need. Breaking of the fast in the evening, known as iftar, also fosters a sense of community and sharing as people come together to share a meal. Here in Nigeria, many Muslims are observing the month of Ramadan with fasting while grappling with the economic hardships plaguing the country. The Naira, Nigeria's currency, experienced a historic decline against the dollar in February this year, leading to a rampant inflation that has rendered life exceedingly difficult for many Nigerians. Many people experience hunger before bedtime, making fasting during Ramadan a formidable challenge. Experts assert that there exists a fundamental issue that requires urgent attention. Religious organizations like the Al-Habibiyah Islamic Society have established the food bank, where Muslims donate both money and food to support the less fortunate during Ramadan. Dedicated volunteers cook and package meals, ensuring that hundreds of impoverished fasting Muslims receive a warm meal for iftar in the evening. The Nigerian government has recognized the food challenge and has moved to address it. This is in addition to other critical measures. Beyond palliatives, experts say the Nigerian government must have the right mix of fiscal and monetary policies in order to get out of the economic situation. They say more than 60,000 hectares of farmland have been abandoned in northern Nigeria because of the banditry and kidnapping. The government needs to address the general insecurity in Nigeria. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
And that's a wrap for your news bulletin, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now. We'll be right back.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
On Friday, March 1st, millions of Iranian people went to the polls to select 290 lawmakers from among over 15,000 candidates. The poll was twinned with a vote for 88 members of the Assembly of Experts, a body tasked with choosing and supervising the leader of the Islamic Revolution. The polls closed at midnight on Friday, 6 hours later than planned, due to a second surge of people who decided to cast their votes in the evening. At the same time, more than 350 foreign reporters from over 20 countries were present in Iran to cover the news of the country's national elections. The twin elections were held smoothly on one single day with the least possible problems, despite all the efforts put in to show the democratic event as a thorny problem for the Iranian political system. The parliament is Iran's national legislature, and its members are responsible for drafting legislation, approving the annual budget, or any international treaties and agreements, among other things. The new elected members will convene in late May. As lawmakers, they're expected to direct the country toward a better future by laws they pass, amend, and change. This is Mr. Hamidreza Taraqi, former Iranian MP and a senior member of Islamic Coalition Party.
If the parliament does its supervisory role and makes sure that the laws are being implemented, many of the current problems will vanish because the solutions have already been developed and adopted as laws. The important thing is to enforce them. If the next parliament focuses more on upholding the existing laws, the majority of the current problems will be solved. Indexes are indicating an improving situation. The World Bank's figures and statistics also confirm this claim. I think that many of the current problems will be solved in the next 2 years.
Initial results are indicative of a rather new configuration in the Islamic Consultative Assembly, or Iran's parliament. With votes tallied manually, Iran's ballot takes time to count. As of producing this episode, official preliminary results from Tehran indicated that Mahmoud Nabavian and Hamid Rassai, two principalists, had topped the list of 30 representatives, followed by 35-year-old state television host turned first-time lawmaker Amir Hossein Sabeti. Speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf finished fourth, and only a handful of his sponsored candidates ascended. Longtime lawmaker Mojtaba Zonnur grabbed a seat in the holy Shia city of Qom. Ali Motahari, former famous parliamentarian affiliated with the principalists, failed along with most members of his 30-long list for Tehran to come close to securing a seat. Dr. Hossein Kanani Muqaddam, senior expert in Middle East issues, has more to say.
What is the difference between the current parliament and the upcoming parliament? Well, the principalists assembled various lists of candidates and, on the other hand, the reformists didn't have a serious participation in the elections. Based on the initial results, the majority of successful candidates are, let's say, ultra-revolutionary, critical of the current parliament and its speaker, Dr. Ghalibaf. Regardless of the results, it was a political competition and we all have to respect the results.
As for the Assembly of Experts, President Ebrahim Raisi renewed his place for a third time, securing more than 82% of the vote in the South Khorasan province located in eastern Iran. On the other hand, Sadiq Amoli Larijani, current head of the top arbitration body known as the Expediency Council, was perhaps the most notable figure who failed to grab a seat in the assembly. The official turnout in the Iranian parliamentary and the Assembly of Experts elections is yet to be announced, but preliminary results at the time of recording this episode of Iran Today suggest that more than 40% of voters went to the polls on March 1st, rejecting the calls from hostile Western regimes and their media outlets to boycott the elections. What is your overall assessment of this round of parliamentary elections in Iran?
This round of elections smashed the biggest election boycott over the past 45 years against our country. In our estimation, the enemies of the Islamic Revolution spent millions of dollars in order to discourage people from going to the polls. But their plot backfired and the voter turnout was over 40%. And that was not something the enemies hoped to happen.
The elections were held across 59,000 voting stations across Iran, with 6,800 in the province of Tehran, which included the capital and several surrounding cities. Until this election, birth certificates had been required as voter identification. This time, voters could use their national ID numbers or other ID documents instead. In fact, according to semi-official reports, 86% of voters in Friday's elections cast their ballots using their national ID cards, 11% with birth certificates, 3% with driver's licenses, and less than 1% with passports and military service completion cards. To Dr. Kanani Muqaddam, the voter turnout was good enough.
Well, those who cared much about national interests went to the polls. Although the voter turnout was not as high as we expected, in terms of quality, the elections were entirely satisfactory. People took part, and according to the latest statistics, the voter turnout is nearly 50%. Although in Tehran it was less than other big cities, the Ministry of Interior is to announce the exact number. Anyway, the political plot hatched by the enemies of the country to undermine the credibility of the elections was foiled. In this sense, the turnout was a success.
Comparatively speaking, voter turnout in 2020 was 42.6%, while in 2016 it reached 61.6%, and in 2012 it was 63.9%. It means that this time around, the turnout rate is almost the same as the last elections. That's why this year saw the biggest election boycott campaign in the last 45 years orchestrated from abroad. To have a better understanding of the voter turnout, we talked to Mr. Nasser Imani, an Iranian political analyst.
The fact is that the voter turnout this year is almost the same as the last round of elections 4 years ago. So it is not correct, in my opinion, to link this level of turnout to the developments that have unfolded in the country over the past 2 to 3 years. Is this voter turnout desirable? Well, in other countries, this level is something acceptable, if not desirable. But for the Islamic Republic of Iran, no, it is not desirable. We should not content ourselves with this turnout rate and need to increase it for the next elections.
There's plenty more to be said, but first a quick media review to give other outlets a chance to get a word in.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of the program where we'll go over some news headlines. President hails election turnout as blow to opponents of Iran. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has appreciated the Iranian people for their massive turnout in the Friday elections to choose members of parliament as well as the assembly of experts, saying that the turnout was a blow to opponents of the country. Irna writes, Raisi said in his message that the ill-wishers of the country did all they could to discourage people from voting, but the people's participation, filled with faith and hope, was a big no to the inhumane front of arrogance and foiled their insincere plan. Iranians rebuff electoral boycott calls. Before the voting day had even arrived in Iran, Western media outlets became awash with reports and analyses predicting that Iranians would not turn up at the polling stations this year. Tehran Times writes, headlines such as Iran braces for low election turnout, Iranians expected to shun elections, and low turnout and boycott expected were how the stenographers of politicians in the West decided to speak of Iran's March 1st elections. However, none of these renowned media outlets managed to come up with substantial data or polling information to support their claims. Iran parliamentary elections likely to go to runoff. With 4,000 out of 5,000 ballot boxes in Tehran counted, some of the candidates seem to have to compete in a runoff, as there were no clear winners among them, officials say. Quoting from Governor of Tehran Province, Alireza Fakhari, Iran Front Page writes, this law says any candidate who wins at least 20% of the valid votes can enter parliament in the first round. But if they fail to garner at least 20% of the ballots, they will probably go to a second round. Over 250,000 forces ensure security of elections, official says. Iranian Interior Ministry's Deputy for Security Affairs, Majid Mirahmadi, said on Friday, over 250,000 forces have been tasked with ensuring the security of elections and guarding the polling sites. Sharq Daily writes, Mirahmadi said on Friday morning that long queues of voters have been formed at many polling stations across the country, describing it as a major epic. He noted that full security prevails at all polling stations thanks to the efforts by the security and intelligence organizations. Venezuela congratulates Iran on elections, commends its people's will. Venezuela's foreign minister has congratulated Iran and its people on their elections and their dedications to combating foreign plots. Al-Mayadeen writes, Venezuela has congratulated Iran in celebration of its elections, praising the exercise as a show of democracy. In a post on X, the Venezuelan Minister of Foreign Affairs said the President Nicolas Maduro and the government of Venezuela congratulate the people and the government of the sister Islamic Republic of Iran for the celebration of the democratic exercise carried out in the 12th elections for the Consultative Assembly or Majlis and the 6th elections for the Assembly of Experts this March 1, 2024 in the Iranian territory. Thank you for joining us in this section. Let's go back to the main narrative.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
The elections were a big slap to those who tried to keep the polling booths empty of voters, that is, the sworn enemies of the Iranian nation. On contrary, people came out in large numbers to exercise their voting rights, thwarting the plots hatched by troublemongers and naysayers. they left no stone unturned since 2021 to create hopelessness among Iranians. But the fact that the turnout matched that of the 2020 parliamentary elections shows that enemy plots failed miserably.
I dare say that the pressure from outside to discourage people was unprecedented this time. I dare say that the sanctions and economic pressure were also meant to make people discontent before the elections. At the same time, Western media outlets cast doubt on the elections. They tried to say that the elections were meaningless with no impact on the future of the people. That said, I have to admit that economic problems acted negatively. Some people might have lost their faith in the efficiency and efficacy of the parliament as a body capable of resolving the economic problems.
Western media showed open hostility in these elections, not towards the candidates and their policies, and not towards the absence of certain candidates, but towards the very elections. Even before the votes were cast, they issued premature verdicts, with some even predicting less than 10% turnout and some suggesting that the Iranian system was rotting. In other words, they weren't seeking to engage in journalism, but were striving to graft a script for Iran's elections and then cover it through their distorting lenses.
Do you think the call for the boycott of elections worked?
Foreigners were seeking to undermine the legitimacy of the Islamic Republic of Iran by calling on people to boycott elections. But people instead said a big no to them. Each ballot was in fact a bullet shot at this boycott scheme. As for the opposition groups outside the country, they use anything to get funds. By ignoring many facts, they want to offer a picture of the country which, although has nothing to do with reality, can appease their paymasters.
While there are still some countries in the region who have no idea about election, the U.S. and its minions are trying to cast doubt on the legitimacy of the Islamic Republic by begging the question, by linking the turnout rate to whatever they wish. Even before the polls opened, they termed the elections a sham, urging people not to vote. At the same time, some Western media outlets tried to manipulate their audiences by showing a few half-empty polling stations out of 60,000 of them across the country. Linking turnout with the legitimacy of the entire political system is not only absurd but hypocritical. Low or lukewarm turnout has been a common phenomenon in other countries, including in the West. Over the last 2 years, such trends have been widely reported in the German, French, and British media, especially in the context of elections of secondary importance. But unlike the Iranian case, the legitimacy of the German, French, and British governments has never been called into question.
Given the relatively low turnout, do you think that the ruling system is faced with a legitimation crisis?
Look, we shouldn't immediately connect whatever happens in society to the legitimation crisis. You know, for months, nationwide protests were held across France, but no one interpreted it as the legitimation crisis of the French political system. There is no logical relationship between these two. You might infer from low turnout that there is, for example, some sort of discontent in society at the performance of, for example, the government. But it's just jumping to conclusion if we connect any political or social development to the legitimation crisis.
Voter turnout is not a fixed, stable phenomenon. It fluctuates from time to time, and it's not going to be the ultimate criterion for the legitimacy of a ruling system, as no single factor determines voter turnout. Rather, a complex mix of individual, social, and political factors have an influence on it. For example, older, more educated, and higher income earning people are generally more likely to vote than younger, less educated people and people with lower incomes.
After nearly 40 elections, people may not take elections as serious as before. Some might feel that it's okay if they do not go to the polls because there are many other people who go, or because they think there are many other elections in the future that they can take part in. Moreover, unlike some other countries in the world, going to the polls is not obligatory in our country. In other countries with higher voter turnout, strict rules, regulations, and fines may act as a carrot for the people to vote. But we do not agree with this method. We believe that people's political participation should be of their own volition. You cannot force them to take part in an election if they don't want to.
Mr. Imani made a noteworthy point concerning the voter turnout.
Please note that on average, the voter turnout in Iran has been around 60%. It means that 40% of people never go to the polls under no circumstances. This is true about the elections held 10, 20, or 30 years ago. Was there any legitimation crisis 30 years ago? I don't think so.
Linking voter turnout to the legitimacy of a political system is not just jumping into conclusion, but altering the reality for mischievous purposes.
Look, as for the self-proclaimed champions of democracy such as the US, the UK, France and the like, if you take a look at their voter turnout, it's usually below 50%. And that's despite all these strict rules, regulations, fines and sometimes punishments. So by their standards, we are still in a satisfactory state, although we were better in the early years after the revolution. As a republic, we like to have higher voter turnout because we believe it would be to the benefit of the country, because, for example, it will help us to have the upper hand in the international arena. Yet, we firmly believe that this political participation should be voluntary, unlike some other countries such as Turkey, France, and the United States.
Since the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran in 1979, 12 parliamentary elections have been held in the country. The ruling system has always encouraged the public to go to the polls to use their rights to vote and their rights to self-determination. And as long as they do so, the real winners will be the Iranian people.
People want their votes to be seen. They don't just want to go to the polls for its own sake, but they vote so as to be heard. They want their opinions and concerns to be taken into serious considerations, whether through the ballot boxes or other ways. They want their representatives to be accessible and responsible, and at the same time, adherent to their election promises.
While hostile media outlets zeroed in on the turnout rate, which is comparatively on par with the rest of the world, this round of elections was outstanding in some other regards. For example, this time voters' identification processes was done electronically and therefore the voters didn't have to form endless queues. This year, the candidates across the country were provided with nearly 200 TV channels, an equal opportunity for the candidates. This was specially suitable for lesser-known candidates and those who did not have enough budget for campaigning expenses. Also, printing posters, in addition to the unnecessary costs, caused a lot of wastage every year. This year, however, it was all avoided with free online and on-air platforms.
This time, the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, the IRIB, provided the candidates across the country with nearly 200 channels. This caused the face of the city to remain almost unchanged in the run-up to the elections. You could rarely see posters, banners, and flyers advertising the candidates. We had to explain this point to foreign reporters who had come to Iran expecting something else. I would like to add that these TV channels and social media platforms were very influential in shaping public opinion.
But that's not all. This year also, transparency in election campaigns reached a new high.
Have we had anything new in this round of parliamentary elections?
There were some changes in this round of elections, some good, some in need of reconsideration. I think the time for the election campaign needs to be extended. Many candidates need more than 2 weeks to introduce themselves to their electorate. This limited time acts to the benefit of more famous candidates. On the other hand, the law transparency enforced this year was about the candidates' campaign budget was a good point for this round. The vetting process, I think, still needs improvement, although, in my opinion, the Garden Council's conduct was much better this year in comparison to the past.
Moreover, the elections were held in complete security. Ensuring security for 59,000 voting stations is easier said than done, especially in the Middle East, a region threatened by terrorist groups and their Western paymasters.
Could you tell us about some of the positive aspects of this round of elections?
The security of the elections was also a priority, underlined by the leader of the Islamic Revolution. While the enemies were lurking to undermine the security of the elections were held the best possible way, despite its extreme difficulty. Likewise, the authorities did their best to have fair elections. There was a head-to-head competition among all political groups to enter the decision-making system. I mean, the parliament. Generally speaking, I can say that we had clean elections, free of fraud, ballot rigging, and smear campaigns. Political groups were all allowed to field their candidates. Different lists of candidates support this claim.
The results of this year's elections were also of great significance. It was a reminder that no one should take victory for granted, no matter how big, famous, or influential they might be. In a fair and free election, the result is no way a foregone conclusion.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do join us again same times to see what else is on. Till next time, take care.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
Sometimes we do not have enough courtesy towards the Holy Quran. This is because we do not have a clear understanding about the high status of the Quran. For instance, when the Quran is open, we stretch our legs in front of it. Or after our recitation is finished, we have the Quran on the ground. We are recommended to put the Quran on a high place. Also, we are told to put the Quran on a book rack and then read it out. These are all signs of respect and courtesy for the Holy Quran. Sometimes the people are looking for the effects of the Quran in their lives without having enough respect for it. This way, they cannot reach the divine truth of the Holy Quran. Respect and being polite in the presence of the Quran is the very basic step to recognize the high status of the Holy Quran in our lives. Thank you very much, dear listeners of Arab English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
حبيب التائبين يا شهر الصائمين وروحا للمعاني تقيم الوحي فينا حبيب التائبين يا شهر الصائمين وروحا للمعاني تقيم الوحي فينا محارب اتصال برب العالمين وروضات سناها تقيم الوحي فينا محارب اتصال برب العالمين وروضات سناها تقيم الوحي فينا بشهر فاض نورا وقرآنا مبينا
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.